Our last speaker of the day, but not the least, I hope, is Professor Dr. Dariush Mwazafaryan. Interestingly enough, he gave the first presentation 3 years ago at a similar symposium here in Wayne State. And Pramod, I hope that doesn't mean that's the opposite of a promotion. But Dr. Mwazafaryan is a cardiologist and epidemiologist, co-director of the program in cardiovascular epidemiology, assistant professor in the Division of Cardiovascular Medicine, Brigham and Women's Hospital, and Harvard Med School, an assistant professor in the Department of Epidemiology at the Harvard School of Public Health. And his research focuses on the effects of lifestyle, particularly dietary habits, on cardiovascular health and disease. And Dr. Mwazafaryan has studied the relationship between lifestyle and cardiovascular health, including trans fatty acids, fish, omega-3 fatty acids, contaminants, and human health, and also the Mediterranean diet. And he has served in several national and international committees and advisory boards, including American Heart Association, Epidemiology and Prevention Leadership Committee, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, and many other organizations internationally and in the US. A fellow of the American College of Cardiology and fellow of the American Heart Association, Dr. Mwazafaryan received a BS in Biological Sciences from Stanford University, an MD from Columbia University, an MPH from the University of Washington, a doctorate in epidemiology from the Harvard School of Public Health, and is board certified in internal medicine and cardiovascular medicine. And the title, yes, I'm hoarse. The title of Dr. Mwazafaryan's presentation this evening is The Optimal Diet to Prevent CVD. What is the role of saturated fat?
Thank you very much. I should remember when my assistant is asked to send a bio that it might be read, so to make him shorter. So I apologize for listening to that. Thank you very much for staying to the end, and hopefully my talk will be useful. I think that what I'm going to try to do is look at all of this from the big picture perspective of a clinician and also an epidemiologist interested in public health. In the end, what does all this mean when we talk about risk factor X going up and risk factor Y going down and this ratio changing by this much? What does that actually mean for the public and for patients? In terms of disclosures, all my research on saturated fat is supported by public money. I have received modest honoraria for coming to talks like this, including from groups like Unilever and Nutrition Impact, and I don't own any ownership or patents or stocks or anything related to saturated fat. So as a clinician, as a cardiologist, what we sort of learned and what the public learned for many years is that the cause of heart disease is fat. And specifically, that total fat and saturated fat. Is my laser pointer? Yeah, that total fat and saturated fat raised total and LDL cholesterol, and that led to coronary heart disease. And this seemed to be sort of an open and shut case because it all sort of just made sense at the time. In ecologic studies, which I'll show you, if you look across countries or populations, countries that had higher levels of total fat intake or saturated fat intake had higher levels of coronary heart disease, and has been shown, I'm not going to show you again and again, multiple studies show that if you increase, on average, fat or saturated fat, you increase cholesterol levels, and cholesterol levels were linked to heart disease. So all of this sort of seemed to make sense. But I think what we realize now is that this was the best evidence that we had in the 1960s and 1970s, but appropriately people made inference from this evidence, but what we realize now is this is really not the strongest type of evidence to have ecologic studies across countries and to just have sort of studies of biochemical pathways. I think somebody asked a question about that. They said, well, this is just cholesterol in the end. I really want to know if the person gets disease, not what their blood cholesterol level is. And so now if we had to start all over again and look at the evidence, ecologic studies and biochemical studies, what are those good for? Well, those are really just good for hypothesis generation, right? If you see a relationship across countries, or if you do a study in 30 men or 30 gerbils and you find a biomarker change, right, that leads to a hypothesis. That doesn't lead to any conclusions about what it'll actually do for health. So, fortunately, and I think many people are as I've heard, dietitians in the room, so you know this, we've had incredible advances in nutritional science in the last two decades, and especially even in the last decade. And this has actually led to some confusion because as we've had advances in science, the message has changed, the science has changed. And that's actually led to a lot of confusion. So people probably get the same response when they try to give dietary advice. People will say, well, you know, we don't know what's good for you. Like 20 years ago, people said butter was bad, switch to margarine. And then they said margarine was bad, switch to butter. And then, you know, dark chocolate was supposed to have fat in it, so don't eat dark chocolate. But now maybe dark chocolate is good for you. And we should have avoided coffee, but now maybe coffee is good for you. So I think people, it sort of leads to what I call nutritional nihilism. People say, nobody knows, so I'm just going to, quote, eat everything in moderation, right? That's what, or eat what my grandmother would recommend. The problem with that is different grandmothers have very different diets, and everything in moderation doesn't really mean anything. It pretty much means what I'm eating now is in moderation. So those types of arguments aren't very good, and what we really want to do is understand, you know, what's important for benefit and what's important for harm and maximize the good and minimize the bad. So why have we had these changing messages? Well, certainly to some extent it's because of media, right? The media picks up on one story and advertises it, and you know, it's just one story and you shouldn't make any conclusions based on one study, but the media likes to do that. But I think the larger issue, and I think the thing that we should actually recognize and celebrate, is that there has been change. Our science has advanced. The stuff we were thinking was correct 20 or 30 years ago was not correct. There's nothing wrong with saying that. And I think that we don't have any problems saying that the medicines we were using 10 or 20 years ago were not that good and we have better medicines now. The genetics that we were doing, genetic science that we were doing was pretty bad when we were looking at haplotypes, and now we need to do genome-wide association scans. Our physics was pretty incorrect, and we actually have better quantum mechanic physics now. In nutrition, this is also true. We've had incredible advances. And really, even the last 10 years, almost every study that I need to show you has been published in the last 10 years to really show what's going on. And so what we have now is, instead of just ecologic studies and animal experiments, which I put down here, in animal studies, these types of studies are very important for studying chronic disease for hypothesis generation. But what we really want to have is disease outcomes, right? I want to know what happens to the person in terms of disease. And ecologic studies of disease, where you compare across countries, there's huge differences between countries. So you can't just compare Japan to the US and say, oh, look, their saturated fat is different. That's what's causing the difference in health. What you need to do is you need to study individuals. And you can study individuals in prospective cohort studies. The nurse's health study has been mentioned. And you can study individuals in randomized controlled trials of disease outcomes, not biomarkers, but disease outcomes. And these two types of evidence are actually equally strong. And for those who've studied epidemiology out there, they might, you know, notice that I'm putting prospective cohort observational studies of disease outcomes on equal footing with randomized trials of disease outcomes. I do not think that these are a stronger evidence than this. And if anybody's interested, we could discuss that in the question and answer period. But basically, they have complementary strengths and limitations. There are limitations to these trials. There are limitations to the cohort studies. And there are strengths to each. And they're actually completely inverse and complementary. So we really like it when both are done. And then, you know, of course, randomized trials of physiologic measures and risk factors in humans are important. I'm not saying they're unimportant. It is important to do a trial and look at blood lipids. It is important to do a trial and look at blood glucose. It is important to do a trial and look at inflammation. But this should not be used to make cause and effect inference about what it's going to do on disease risk. So you really need all of this. And for hopefully, you want at least these top three types of evidence to make any kind of strong inference about you know, what actually affects disease. So why is the so based on our evidence that we have now, sort of, as I said, these advances, that paradigm that I showed you, the traditional paradigm, reduce fat, reduce saturated fat, your cholesterol goes down, you get less heart disease, we know now that that's actually wrong. That's incorrect. It's not just oversimplified, it's actually incorrect. And why is that? Well, instead of just thinking about saturated fat or fat, there's numerous dietary factors that affect cardiovascular health. So carbohydrate quality, actually, I don't think was mentioned. People talked about carbohydrate quantity, but I actually think carbohydrate quality is much more important than carbohydrate quantity in terms of the types of carbohydrates that are consumed. Specific fats and fatty acids, I think fatty acids, individual fatty acids are bioactive. Many, many foods are important, fruits and vegetables, whole grains, fish, fiber, dairy and meats, alcohol, a wide range of other things, phytochemicals, energy balance. Food processing and preparation methods, we know so little now about, high temperature heating, what that does to food, advanced glycation end products, and so forth. But the bottom line, there's multiple things that we have to think about when we think about cardiovascular disease. And critically, the one take-home message from my talk, there's probably going to be a couple, one take-home message is these dietary factors don't affect heart disease just through blood lipids. Right? We can't just look at LDL cholesterol or total cholesterol or HDL cholesterol or the ratio and try to understand what a dietary factor is going to do to health, because there are multiple pathways for cardiovascular disease. Of course, blood lipids and apolipoprotein levels are risk factors for heart disease, but blood pressure is a risk factor. Vascular function, glucose insulin levels, inflammation, vascular adhesion, weight gain, cardiac hemodynamics are affected by diet, clotting and platelet function, and cardiac arrhythmia. All of those things are affected by multiple dietary factors in different ways. So it's very informative and helpful and provides sort of biologic support if you do a study and you find that one of these dietary factors affects one of these risk factors. But we should not be making policy decisions, dietary decisions, or dietary recommendations based on one or two intermediate risk factors. And I'll show you why, because that leads to incorrect conclusions. And then lastly, I'm not going to talk about this too much, but for people who are more interested in the clinical side of things, you know, we can't also put coronary heart disease as one sort of box here. There's lots of disease outcomes. There's chronic atherosclerosis, there's plaque rupture and heart attacks, there's sudden death, strokes, diabetes, overweight, heart failure, other arrhythmia. So there's lots of other things that are going on too. But sort of the one take-home message is that cardiovascular disease is complex, diet is complex, and so we can't just say, what is this dietary factor X due to LDL, and make a decision based on how it's going to affect your health. So let's go to the evidence that saturated fat does cause heart disease, and I'm really going to focus on coronary heart disease or atherosclerotic heart disease for the rest of the talk. So, you know, there's many studies like this, but this is one ecologic study where basically if you look at the grams of animal fat consumed, or you could replace this with saturated fat consumed, and you look at the death rate from ischemic heart disease in these countries, you know, you roughly see a straight line. Of course, there's a spread around these lines, and if anybody had looked at these, noticed the other previous speaker's slides on ecologic studies, you also always see a spread around the line, but you can, you know, roughly draw a line in this. So, you know, across countries, across populations, you know, saturated fat intake, when it's higher in a country, there's more heart disease. And then the second, really, the second piece of evidence, I think can be summarized really nicely by this meta-analysis, which was done, and I think Dr. Brower presented this by Martine and Catan. This basically looked at 60 randomized controlled feeding trials in humans, and many of those were shown individually in the reports that were mentioned by the previous speakers, but basically putting all of the trials together to say what's the overall average effect, because any one study, again, is not helpful to really make decisions about what to do in real life. So putting all 60 trials together, what they found is in comparison to carbohydrate, so the reference here is carbohydrate as sort of the background most common macronutrient in the diet, they found that for every percent of calories that's increased for saturated fat, you increase LDL cholesterol. For every percent of calories that's increased from monounsaturated fat, you decrease LDL a little bit. And for every percent of calories that's increased from polyunsaturated fat, you decrease LDL cholesterol a little bit more. So those two slides plus animal experiments is basically the sum total of evidence that saturated fat causes heart disease. That's it. Right? I've showed you all of it. It's that in ecologic studies across countries that have higher saturated fat levels have heart disease, and that saturated fat raises LDL cholesterol. That's the evidence. And as I said, animal studies, you know, animal experiments where you know, I don't think, you know, should be generalized to humans, but rather used for support. So this is the evidence, and it is evidence, and it is suggestive, but what evidence is there that is otherwise relevant? Well, I think it's helpful to step back and look at the total fat example. So I often give these talks to clinicians or physicians, and when I tell them that total fat intake is no longer considered a major risk factor for chronic disease, they're actually surprised. And they say, really? I thought total fat intake is bad for you. And again, the room being dietitians, probably most of you know now that total fat intake is not really a target for reducing diabetes, reducing heart disease, reducing cancer. It's still controversial about obesity. I mean, I think the evidence from randomized trials is very convincing that total fat intake doesn't affect obesity one way or the other, but there's still some controversy. But I think everyone in the room, right, knows now that we don't push people to low-fat diets anymore, right? Because it doesn't seem to have a health benefit. Nobody's nodding or shaking their head, right? Is that right? Okay, good. So this is known, right? But if you look at the evidence for total fat and heart disease, it looks just like the evidence for saturated fat and heart disease. You could do any ecologic study, and you can look at total fat intake and heart disease. Look, there's this wonderful linear relationship. And you could do the same graph for total cholesterol in the blood and percent calories from fat, and you'd see the same relationship. And you say, look, you know, total fat causes heart disease. And that's what people did in the 1960s and 1970s. And I'm not going to show you all of the evidence, but there's been many, many prospective cohort studies and one very, very large randomized controlled trial, many smaller randomized controlled trials, basically showing conclusively that total fat intake has no effect on heart disease. And so this is a summary statement from a recent expert consultation that was held at the World Health Organization, sort of looking at all of the evidence for total fat. And everybody agrees that there is neither probable or convincing evidence for any significant effects of total dietary fats on coronary heart disease or cancer. So this is actually the same evidence for saturated fat, but we haven't, for some reason, reached this same conclusion, although I think we should. So why am I skeptical that saturated fat is a major risk factor for heart disease? So if you look at the change in LDL, right, you would say this is bad, right? Saturated fat on average raises LDL, and with apologies to all of the previous speakers, I'm talking about saturated fat as a global whole. I'm going to touch on at the end about individual saturated fatty acids of different carbon chain lengths. But right now, we're talking about saturated fatty acids as a whole, which is, on average, mostly 16-0. Well, what if you look at not LDL cholesterol, but you look at triglycerides, right? Triglycerides predict diabetes. Higher levels of triglycerides predict heart disease. And so if we look at triglycerides, what happens when you consume monounsaturated or polyunsaturated fat versus carbohydrate? Triglycerides go down significantly with any type of fat. So if I was going to use this as my decision tree, I would say, look, all the fats are good and they're all about the same, so we should be eating any fat instead of carbohydrate, and that'll be good for risk. Well, what about HDL cholesterol? This has also been shown, again, in individual studies. This is from the meta-analysis of 60 randomized controlled feeding studies in humans. So this is really the best summary of all of the current worldwide evidence. And if you look at the change in HDL cholesterol when you replace saturated fat, mono, or polys for carbohydrate, HDL goes up. That's already been shown. Does anybody know the only thing that raises HDL better than saturated fat?
Alcohol,
right? That's the only other thing that raises saturated fat. So if you have a patient with low HDL, right, the best ways to raise HDL are alcohol and saturated fat. And I'm not saying, based on this, we should recommend that, but that's actually what the evidence shows. So saturated fat raises HDL the best, mono's next, and poly's next. So we have all of these conflicting biomarkers here. Do we make our decision based on LDL? Do we make it based on triglycerides? Do we make it based on HDL? Well, I think probably the best thing to do is to at least look at a sort of a global lipid marker, and you could use the LDL to HDL cholesterol ratio. I think that's actually probably the best one. I agree with Casey on that. But you know, that's not often used, and so the total cholesterol to HDL cholesterol ratio correlates pretty well with the LDL to HDL cholesterol ratio. And so if you look at that as kind of a global marker of lipid risk, right, that incorporates LDL, triglycerides, and HDL, and VLDL, what's the comparison? Well, saturated fat versus carbohydrate, there's no effect. This is not significant, statistically significant. Even exchanging 5% energy of saturated fat for carbohydrate doesn't change your total cholesterol to HDL ratio at all on average. And either of the unsaturated fats significantly drop your total cholesterol to HDL ratio. So based on this, I would say, well, saturated fats are probably about the same as carbs for cardiovascular risk, and monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats are actually beneficial. And before we move on, I should just pause. It's always helpful to put things in context. So these are, you know, a 5% energy change in nutrients. Is that a big change or a small change in saturated fat or polys? Is a 5% energy exchange a big difference or a small difference in the diet?
Pretty big.
So I heard one small and one big, so one person's right. So yeah, it's big, right? So the average saturated fat intake in the U.S. is about 13%, 12.5%, 13% of calories. So we're talking about going from, you know, if we're going to reduce, going from 13 or 12.5% down to 7.5% or 8%. It's a huge change, right? So we're talking about big changes here in these lipids when we're talking about 5% of energy. You know, again, based on this, I would predict saturated fats like carbs. But so I think, you know, my point is not to, so far, you might, you know, I guess that I started out saying I was going to try to answer questions. So far, I've just been raising questions. I still don't think I have the answer. Why? Because this is just a biomarker. Right? In the end, you could care less what your total cholesterol to HDL cholesterol ratio is. You want to know, do I get disease or not? So this is helpful. And I think as an overall lipid marker, this actually suggests that saturated fats probably no better or no worse on average than carbs, and that the unsaturated fats are good for you on average compared to carbs. But this is just the lipid marker. So I'm not going to go into all of the studies of blood pressure and insulin sensitivity and other risk markers that have been measured with respect to saturated fat. We just published a review on it. One of my trainees took the lead on that. Her first author is actually right here, Misha and Mozafarian, Lipids 2010. It just came out. And I think it's open access. If people are interested, she actually has a really nice summary of all of the trials looking at blood pressure, endothelial function, insulin sensitivity, with saturated fat being exchanged for other nutrients. And the short answer is there's not that many trials, maybe 5 or 6 or 10 trials, and the results are very, very mixed. And so I don't think there's actually any good evidence either way if you wanted to do biomarker by biomarker, go through blood pressure, endothelial function, glucose, et cetera, that saturated fat has a big effect on any of those things. So this is pretty much it when we get to biomarker evidence. And so really what we want to do now is look at the body count, right? Look at the actual disease rates. And fortunately, there have been 3 really nice meta-analyses published in the last 2 years on saturated fat and heart disease events, looking at prospective cohort studies. So just a little bit of epidemiology again, in contrast to an ecologic study, where I look at the average heart disease rate in a country and the average, saturated fat intake in a country and compare it to another country, a cohort study takes tens of thousands of individuals, takes their specific intake of a nutrient, and then looks at their disease rate, and then controls for their other lifestyle characteristics, other dietary characteristics as best as possible. So it's a much more powerful way of seeing whether a nutrient has an effect on disease. So this is a meta-analysis looking at 16 different prospective cohort studies from around the world where cohort studies have been done. Of course, there are some holes in the world, but from Europe, from Asia, and from North America. And each of these studies is listed here. And then if people aren't accustomed to looking at a forest plot, the line here is a relative risk of 1, meaning no effect. The red circle is the relative risk estimate, and the lines are the confidence intervals. So this is each individual study, and then here's the overall pooled effect for the highest versus the lowest category of saturated fat intake in each of these studies. So this is usually comparing about 18% energy from saturated fat to about 10% energy from saturated fat sort of across the population in these studies. So again, these are big differences in saturated fat, and you don't even have to do the pooled meta-analysis if you're used to looking at forest plots, right? Every study is straight down the middle, no effect, except this one study showed a little bit of risk. But every other study is straight down the middle. And of course, when you do the pooled meta-analysis, no surprise, there's no significant association at all between the extreme highest intakes of saturated fat versus the extreme lowest intakes of saturated fat in prospective cohort studies from around the world. And this is the third meta-analysis to show this. So this actually provides strong evidence that saturated fat intake is not a risk factor for heart disease. And if you go back to what I showed you with the change in the total cholesterol to HDL cholesterol ratio, right, what actually happens in practice? I mean, again, we have the advantage of having people with clinical nutrition experience in the room. What actually happens when people lower their saturated fat in practice? What do they replace it with? They replace it with carbohydrate, right? In the United States, saturated fat was about 18% of calories, where it is currently in France, and it's probably not going to go anywhere in France. It's probably going to stay there. And it's been dropped because of guidelines, because of policy, because of recommendations, because of industry picking up on these guidelines. It's come down from about 18-19% of calories to 12 or 13% of calories. What's it been replaced with? It's been replaced with carb. And so in these studies, on average, when people raise their or lower their saturated fat, they exchange it for carb. And if we go back, right, what would we predict based on just the total cholesterol to HDL ratio? We predict no effect, not harm, not benefit, nothing. And that's exactly what's seen. So I think this is a case where the biomarker studies in humans are very, very consistently supported by the cohort studies in humans, that there's really no effect on average if you exchange saturated fat for carbohydrate, which is in practice what we've been doing for 30 or 40 years. So, those are observational studies, as I said. Those are prospective cohort studies, and people with, you know, expertise would say, well, those are observational, there can be confounding, there can be other characteristics that are different between the people who are having higher saturated fat versus lower saturated fat, and no matter how well you adjust, you can't control for those, so there might be other differences between the participants, and you haven't picked those up, right? And so that's true, that's a very valid point. So if there is confounding, so let's think through that a little bit. If there is confounding, do people who have higher saturated fat diets, are they on average healthier or less healthy than people who have low saturated fat diets? People have higher saturated fat in their diet. So again, I hear both, which is good. So I mean, someone's right. So they're less healthy. So people on average, if you look at populations, people who have more saturated fat on their diet, they have worse diets on average, right? They tend to have lower fruits and vegetables, less whole grains. They tend to smoke more, less physical activity. You know, they tend to be less healthy. So if there is confounding in those studies, if we weren't able to adjust for all of those confounding factors in the studies, the people with the highest saturated fat intake, right, they're actually, you'd expect them to have harm because all of their lifestyle characteristics would predict harm. So if there is residual confounding in the study, it actually means that saturated fat could be a little bit protective because we're actually finding null, we're finding no association. But that's, you know, that's what the actual confounding structure would do. But let's leave that aside and let's say, okay, there could be confounding, it's observational. Is there trial evidence? Fortunately, we have very nice trial evidence of replacing saturated fat for carbohydrate. And so the Women's Health Initiative was a very nice NIH-sponsored trial of about 50,000 women in this dietary arm around the country who were randomized to a low-fat diet versus control. And as people probably know, the results. I will show them on the next slide. But one of the criticisms of this is, well, they didn't get to the dietary goal. Their goal was to get to a total fat level of 20%, right, which is a very low total fat. Average in the U.S. is about 33%. So to get down to 35%, so to get down to 20% is a huge change in total fat. They didn't get there. But they did have an enormous effect overall. In the intervention group, on average, total fat was reduced 9% of total calories at 7 years at the end of the study. That's a huge reduction. And a third of that was due to saturated fat reduction. Saturated fat went down, was about 3% lower at 7 years, which again, on a population level, among 50,000 women, that's like going from 13% to 10%. That's a big change, right? We're not talking about a small change. What was it replaced with? It was replaced with carbohydrate. So what happened in this trial? Well, before we get to the results, the other important thing to keep in mind in the Women's Health Initiative is, you know, with a 50,000 woman trial, they couldn't afford to give both arms equal interventions in terms of intensity. So basically, the group that got the diet intervention was given counseling, feedback, group sessions, individual sessions, dietitians called them, they got phone calls, right, because they wanted them to stick with the diet. The control arm got nothing. Right, the control arm got their usual care, right? So what would that do in a trial? In a trial, that's going to make the intervention group more health conscious, it's going to make them more interested in taking care of themselves, and sure enough, they actually increase their physical activity, they reduce their smoking more than in the control group, right? So we'd expect that there would be a benefit, right, in the intervention arm, if for nothing else, that they were getting phone calls, they were going to group sessions, they were thinking about their diet, they were exercising more. And so what are the results of the trial? Here's the results of the trial for coronary heart disease. Over 7 years, the lines are totally superimposed. These are survival curves, so people are, event curves. So start out with 0 years and go out to 9 years was the longest subjects were followed. And these are, you know, the percentage, cumulative percentage of events. And you can see basically I haven't put on the slide, I don't remember, which is the let me see, 0.97. So the black is the intervention, and the thinner black is the control arm. They're basically superimposable, right? There was no effect of reducing saturated fat by 3% energy in a randomized trial and replacing it with carbohydrate. So here we have evidence from biomarker studies, prospective cohort studies, and a very large, very well done randomized trial, all very convincingly showing us that saturated fat compared to carb, which is the average background nutrient, has no effect on coronary heart disease. So, does that mean saturated fat's totally irrevelant? Does it have no effects at all? Well, I don't know the answer to that. But I think there are some interesting details that have been coming out in the last few years that help us to think about saturated fat. So this is also an observational study. This is 11 major cohort studies from the U.S., Europe, and Asia. And this is a meta-analysis, but this is actually a very nice way of doing a meta-analysis. They actually got all of the investigators from the 11 cohort studies to pool their data, to get the original raw data and do the analysis from scratch, symmetrically, systematically, in the same in all the cohorts. So it's really an analysis of about 350,000 women and men from around the world as one large worldwide cohort. So it's a very powerful way of doing an analysis. And what they did is they didn't just say, as in the previous meta-analysis, what's the effect of saturated fat on average compared to the average background diet. They, you know, use statistical techniques to estimate what's the effect of saturated fat versus poly, saturated fat versus carb, and saturated fat versus mono. And what was found in that study is for every 5% energy exchange, again, so that's a big energy exchange, for every 5% energy exchange, if you replace saturated fat with polys, you got about a 12% lower risk of heart disease. And so this goes along with what Casey was saying, that polys seem to be protective. If you replace saturated fat with polys, there was a significantly lower risk of heart disease. Again, about 12% lower risk of heart disease. If you replace saturated fat for carb, they actually not only didn't see a benefit, they actually saw a small but significant increased risk. So that saturated fat versus carb, there was 7% higher risk. And saturated fat for mono, very interestingly, based on the total cholesterol to HDL ratio, you'd expect benefit from this, right? But in this study of disease events, they actually saw a trend that was not statistically significant, but they saw a trend towards harm when monounsaturated fat replaced saturated fat. And we'll come back to this. But this was not statistically significant, so I think all we can say on average is that there was no significant effect when saturated fat was exchanged for monos. So this seems to suggest that saturated for PUFA, if you increase your polys, right, you get benefit. So I'm not going to show this in the interest of time, but there have also been cohort studies, prospective cohort studies, which have compared polyunsaturated fat to carb. Okay, and suffice it to say, if saturated fat is about the same as carb, what would you expect if PUFA is replaced for carb? Well, you'd expect benefit, right? If PUFA is better than saturated fat, and if saturated fat's about the same as carb, you'd actually expect benefit. And in many prospective cohort studies which have looked at this, polyunsaturated fatty acids are beneficial compared to carb and about the same benefit as replacing them for saturated fat. So I would agree a little bit with Casey. I don't think it's the PS ratio that's important. I think it's the amount of polys that are important. If you're eating polys in your diet, polys are good for you. And so whether you're replacing saturated fat or carb, you should be eating polys. So let's just go back and review sort of the cohort studies because I think they're very informative. This is the meta-analysis of all studies for saturated fat without really considering, I'm going backwards, without really considering any specific replacement nutrient, and there was no significant effect. When you consider specific replacement nutrients, you take out the saturated fat, what are you replacing it with? PUFA is beneficial, and carb is a little bit harmful. So is all carb the same? No, not all carbohydrate the same. And one person asked this morning, what about fruits? You know, fruits have carbohydrate in them. Are fruits the same as other carbs? And so, you know, there's lots of ways one could define carbohydrate quality. One could do it by dietary fiber content. One could do it by structure. Is it a whole grain? Is it a minimally processed whole grain? Is it a milled whole grain? Is it a refined grain? Is it a liquid sugar? One could do it by glycemic index or glycemic load, which sort of is the glycemic response. And one could do it by content of bran or germ, how much of the original bran or germ are still in the whole grain. But I think however one defines carbohydrate quality, it's clear that carbohydrate quality is very important for cardiovascular disease. And this is not a talk on carbohydrates, so I'm not going to show you all the slides, but hopefully people are familiar in the room that if you eat carbs with more fiber, or if you eat carbs that are more whole grain, or if you eat carbs that have lower glycemic index or lower glycemic load, it's beneficial for glucose insulin levels, for triglycerides, for HDL, and for inflammation. So this is looking at saturated fat versus all carbs on average. What if we start to tease out the types of carbs? And there's only been one cohort study that's been done. So again, I don't like to make conclusions based on one study. So as opposed to everything I've shown you so far, which is meta-analyses of all the worldwide evidence, this is just one study. So this is, I think, interesting and needs to be confirmed. But what they found in this one study is when they did the same sort of estimated replacement for 5% energy, saturated fat versus low glycemic index carbs, which are, you know, basically whole grain carbs, they found a trend towards benefit, wasn't statistically significant. Saturated fat versus medium glycemic index carbs, so sort of a little bit refined, maybe some milled whole grains, they found it was about the same. And if you take saturated fat out of the diet and replace it with high glycemic index carbs, which is, again, the vast majority of the U.S. diet, probably about 40% of all of our calories are high glycemic index carbs, potatoes, white bread, white rice, sugars, right? 35% higher risk of heart disease if you eat high glycemic index carbs versus saturated fat. So I think all of these studies together are telling a very consistent story, that on average, saturated fat is no better or worse than the average background diet. If you compare it to carbs, to total carbs, it's a little bit better, actually, than total carbs. And if you compare it to, you know, very refined carbs, it's actually better than refined carbs. And probably, if you really compared it to true whole grain carbs, it's probably saturated fat's probably worse, but, you know, that needs to be confirmed with more study. You know, these are, again, what I just showed you from the last two slides was observational studies. Is there trial evidence for replacing saturated fat with polyunsaturated fat? The Women's Health Initiative reduced saturated fat in a trial, but it replaced it with carb. There have been trials that have been done which have replaced saturated fat with polyunsaturated fat, which, based on observational studies, we would predict benefit. And so these trials have been done, relatively small trials. If you look at the number of events, about 100 to 200 events in each trial. And the trials have been done from around the world, and in Los Angeles, in England, in Europe. I keep saying around the world, like Europe and the U.S. are around the world, but there aren't a lot of trials, unfortunately, in many other developing countries. And individually, again, we're looking at a forest plot. You can see that if this is one, no significant effect. Many of these trials individually, the confidence intervals cross one, so individually you couldn't draw any strong conclusions. But if you do a pooled meta-analysis for the overall pooled effect in these trials, what is found that if you take out saturated fat in the diet and replace it with polys, there's a 19% lower risk of heart disease in randomized controlled trials that was statistically significant. And what levels of polys were used in these trials? This gets to some important questions. The control groups had sort of average background poly intake. So the control groups had about 4 to 5% to 6% energy from polys. The intervention groups, because these were trials, they really wanted to see an effect, they got anywhere from 13 to 20% of calories from polyunsaturated fat. And so this is going, on average, well, I don't show it here. On average, if you pool these, on average, it's going from about 5% to about 15%. So going from 5% of PUFA to 15% of PUFA, you get a highly significant 20% reduction in heart disease risk. So I don't think 6%, based on this, is an upper threshold. I think it just seems like there's linear benefits to PUFA based on randomized controlled trials. And if you do this per 5% energy, right, this is, again, these trials had big effects, right, big changes in PUFA. If you do it per 5% energy, it's a 10% lower risk of heart disease per 5% energy. So if we step back and say, okay, look, we can assess the effects of diet on chronic disease using different things, and I think my opinion is that the strongest evidence is from randomized trials of disease outcomes, prospective cohort studies of disease outcomes, and combined with informed by randomized trials of risk factors. What happens if we look at all three of these simultaneously? So I think Ingeborg Brower already showed this slide in her talk, but I'm just going to go over it again. This is basically all of the evidence I've just shown you in one slide, so you can sort of put it all together and see what makes sense. And so this is showing the evidence for dietary exchange of 5% of total calories, which is a pretty big exchange, for polyunsaturated fat in place of saturated fat, carbohydrate replacing saturated fat, and monounsaturated fat replacing saturated fat. For each of these, I'm showing you three different risk estimates based on these three types of evidence. First, what you would predict from the meta-analyses in humans of the effects on total cholesterol to HDL cholesterol. So we know what these chain exchanges do to the total cholesterol to HDL cholesterol ratio. What would we predict from that biomarker? Next, what's been seen in randomized controlled trials where they've actually looked for disease events? And then next, what's been seen in observational cohort studies where they actually look at disease events? So these are three completely different kinds of evidence, right, from completely different studies. And it's the concordance of the results, I think, is remarkable. When I first put this studies together, I was actually shocked by how similar and concordant the findings are. Basically, if you replace polyunsaturated fat for saturated fat, whether you do this based on total cholesterol to HDL, based on the randomized trials or the cohort studies, you have about a 10 to 13% lower risk of heart disease, which on a population level is not a small deal. I mean, that's actually on a population level pretty important, but very, very concordant estimates. If you replace carbohydrate, if you eat carbohydrate in place of saturated fat, again, what we've been doing for 30 or 40 years, right, you see no benefit whatsoever, whether you look at the total cholesterol to HDL ratio, whether you look at the Women's Health Initiative trial, or whether you look at observational cohort studies. Monounsaturated fat, I think, you know, you actually get discordant results. If you predict the effect based on biomarkers, the total cholesterol to HDL cholesterol ratio, you'd predict benefit. And this is actually the reason we recommend monounsaturated fat, is because of what it does to blood lipids. if you look at the pooled analysis of observational cohort studies, actually, there was no significant benefit and actually a trend towards harm. And there's actually never been a randomized trial of disease events in humans comparing monounsaturated fat to saturated fat. So I think that actually, for me, I'm still not totally sure what to make of monounsaturated fat, but I'll come back to it again at the end in sort of a summary slide. And I just want to show diabetes. Most of the talk was focused on coronary heart disease, but if you look at the American Diabetes Association recommendations or almost any website for recommendations for diabetes risk, they say lower saturated fat intake. And to me, it's sort of a bizarre recommendation, right? Because what do diabetics have in terms of blood cholesterol? They have low HDL and high triglycerides. Lowering saturated fat lowers HDL further, raises triglycerides more. So it's actually a very bizarre recommendation. But if you actually look at the prospective cohort studies of individuals, again, this is prospective cohort studies from different countries, and you look at incidence of diabetes based on saturated fat intake, this is the same setup as the other meta-analyses I've shown you. Here there's only been five prospective cohort studies. This is comparing the highest category of saturated fat to the lowest category of saturated fat, and you can see every single study showed absolutely no effect. And if you do the overall estimate for the cohorts, here it is, a relative risk of 0.98, basically 1, with the confidence intervals overlapping 1. There's actually no benefit for reducing risk of diabetes if you lower your saturated fat. And fortunately, I've put on the same slide, we also have the Women's Health Initiative, which I told you was the randomized trial where saturated fat was replaced for carbohydrate. And they also looked at diabetes outcomes, and they found actually no significant effect, a relative risk of 1.05 in a randomized trial. So again, you have cohort studies and randomized controlled trials in humans showing that saturated fat really has no major effect on diabetes risk, probably because it has different effects on different biologic pathways that on average are sort of a wash.